All right, moving on to item five. This is our scheduled educational presentation on the Ralph M. Brown Act, open meeting laws. With that, I will turn the floor over to our general counsel. Karen, good morning.
Good morning. Today we'll review the Ralph M. Brown Act. We call it the Brown Act, in short, and it governs open meetings. It gives us a list of statutes that apply to open meetings and tell us how to conduct local public agency board meetings in the state of California. We do have a slide deck that was included in your agenda packet, and so we'll go through those slides. And can you hear me okay? Closer. Okay, so we'll go through the slide deck that is in your agenda packet to go over the Brown Act open meetings laws this morning. As you know, the Brown Act applies to meetings of local agencies in the state of California, and it applies to the Board of Retirement of CICERA's board meetings. And it's always important to keep in mind the key concepts behind the Brown Act. The actual rules can get a little complicated, but if you keep in mind the concepts behind it, you should be able to kind of understand it and get what the law is trying to do here. And those, the purpose of the law is to make sure that the meetings are open to the public and accessible to the public. And so we have to have a descriptive agenda that provides notice to the public of the topics that the board is going to be discussing, as well as the time and the place of the meeting, so that the public is able to attend and also know in advance what topics are going to be discussed. And then during the board meetings, the public has to be given an opportunity to comment. I will advance the slides.
A magic trick. Abracadabra, advance the slide. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks. So we are on slide two of the presentation deck, and we just went over the purpose behind the Brown Act. And of course, it applies to meetings of the board, and so there's a definition for what a meeting is. A meeting is a basically a congregation of the board, a quorum that discusses topics within the jurisdiction of the board. And there is a prohibition in the Brown Act against meeting basically secretly away from the public, because again, the purpose here is to make sure that the public meetings are open. And so the Brown Act prohibits something called serial meetings. That's where there could be a communication among the board members, or if you can imagine a string of communications that end up becoming a discussion of the full board or a quorum of the board, and that is prohibited. Again, those are things that need to occur at a publicly noticed meeting, such as what we're doing here this morning. So we have some examples, especially having to do with emails and texts, because technology is all around us. We have some examples of problems of communications that are unlawful and violate the Brown Act. So this is on slide number four. And one example is that if we have one trustee that emails or texts all trustees about a retirement board issue, that is unlawful. That is basically a violation of the Brown Act, because this is a communication among the board and it needs to be done in public. The second example we have is a response to an update from CICERA staff about a retirement board issue. And that response is from a trustee, but it is sent to all the trustees. Again, that is a violation of the Brown Act. Email polling of the board is also prohibited. in an email chain involving contact from Trustee A to Trustee B, who then later communicates with Trustee C, who then later communicates with Trustee D and Trustee E. Now you have five trustees involved in this serial communication, and that is a violation of the Brown Act. So watch out for emails, texts, and that kind of thing.
Well, and quick question, because this comes up here. What about logistics emails? For example, a majority of the board is going to a conference, and they say, hey, do you all want to meet up for breakfast? It has nothing to do with board business, but nevertheless, everyone is a board member.
I think that's probably okay.
Okay.
Keeping in mind that texts and emails are public record, and those
right.
Could be requested. If it's a topic that is something that the board is handling or could handle, then that is a discussion that has to be done in public.
And then I'm going to do it one. Even, I guess, because we approve our calendar, if we were to say, send a broad email, hey, this calendar isn't working for me, should we switch meetings to this date? That would be a Brown Act issue, wouldn't it?
Because it would be an issue, yeah, because that is...
It's something that we would be discussing. So anyway, it's just something in Brown Act trainings periodically, because you do get those emails, hey, are you all available to switch the meeting to this date? And it just, so anyway... Nuances of the Brown Act.
yeah. And then we can always cure a problem like that mm-hmm. by putting it on the agenda mm-hmm. and having that discussion on the agenda in public. But yeah, just watch out for those serial communications or email blasts and things like that.
Karen, I also have a question. Are public statements from a trustee or some kind of board member about the issue the board discusses, are those violations? Because technically, everybody on the board will see the public statement, right? Like a newspaper, radio, whatever, TV, like how it is.
You're asking about one trustee making a public statement? One trustee making a public statement is not a violation of the Brown Act. But we do have rules about that type of statement in the code of ethics a policy that we have for the board, and there's a certain disclaimer if you're publishing your statement to members. There's a certain disclaimer that you have to include. Basically, you're not speaking on behalf of the board. You're speaking as an individual. So it's not a Brown Act violation for one board member to make a public statement, but there's other rules that govern it.
But if you forwarded it to everyone and started commenting on it, then you'd have a different issue if it was a Cesarean issue that they had been discussing.
Yes. Thanks for the good questions. So then I think we can move on to the next slide, which is number 5. And that addresses committee meetings. It's important to note that the Brown Act also applies to standing committees of the board. So one example is the audit committee of the board. That is a standing committee. And so the Brown Act applies to it. We have to issue an agenda. We have to provide the notice to the public and hold the meeting in such a way that the public can attend and make public comment. There is an exception, though, to what we call ad hoc committees. Those are not standing committees. Those are committees that are appointed for a limited purpose and a limited duration. They're not standing committees, and those the Brown Act does not apply to, so they do not have to be conducted in public. So on to slide 6. There are exceptions to the Brown Act that really make sense. For example, attendance at a conference. As long as the conference is open to the public, it doesn't have to be free. They could charge for admission. But as long as it's open to the public, then a majority of the retirement board members may attend. But they're prohibited from having a discussion among themselves about Cesera business. So an example would be the SACRS conference. We've confirmed that that is open to the public, and so we can send more than five, for more trustees to those conferences. The same similar exception applies to an attendance at a purely social event. A majority of the board may attend that, for example, a funeral, but we have to make sure that the trustees are not discussing among themselves Sisera business. Next, on slide 8, we have some information about social media. The Brown Act a few years ago added provisions that address social media and whether communication and actions on social media are violations. And recently, with SB 707, this was added with a sunset date, but SB 707 removed the sunset date, meaning it's making these rules permanent that, yes, trustees can be on social media and make statements, comments on social media, but you can't have then another trustee commenting or even liking that other trustee's statement, because that now becomes a discussion. So that's not allowed. So be very careful with social media. It's kind of interesting that the legislature went beyond a comment, which is a sentence or words, to include also those symbols that you can click on, reactions that you can click on, like, dislike, and all of that. So
has this been tested yet judicially?
We haven't found any case law on this.
Yeah, I'm asking only because in the example of two.
It's not a quorum. My first thought was that's not a quorum.
Yeah,
you just have
not a quorum.
You just have one person.
It's not a quorum. It's not a meeting as defined in the Act.
It could be just two trustees. One is liking the others.
Yeah, that seems to, I don't see why that would violate Brown Act.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, I can't tell you, well, I guess I'm not going to say that. There probably could be hallway conversations from time to time here between trustees. There might be here a group of trustees, less than five, standing around the coffee machine. You know, there's a lot of opportunity for social discourse.
But I think it's referring only to if you're making a statement related to Sisera. It's not just social, isn't this?
Correct. Saying,
yeah, it has to be Sisera related business. And no, to me, it seems funny that just one other trustee could do that. But anyway, and I see that in other political realms where someone might say, so excited, the Board of Supervisors tomorrow is going to pass a resolution, or we're hoping to pass a resolution to, you know, promote social equity, you know, justice, et cetera, and then having another supervisor like it, and then, oh, you violated the Brown Act.
Or even share it. I didn't mention sharing. Sharing is also noted in the statute.
No, it's a funny, doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But.
Yeah, we have elected officials and appointed officials who are very active in social media. You and I were probably thinking of the same elected official in the Facebook example, but there's a lot of activity in social media.
Right, very interesting. So,
does it distinguish between a private individual versus a person that identifies their role as a board member?
I think if you're a member and you're on Sisera and you're commenting on Sisera related business, I mean, as long as it's related, you can comment about your dog and we can all like it, but no one's going to say anything. You know, that's not a violation.
Right, but if as a board member, what if you also qualify as a tax-paying citizen? Are you limited in what you can say about Sisera?
Well, as long as you're not limited, we're all limited on saying, hey, we think that's stupid, or hey, we like it. So you can say whatever you want. It's just the rest of us can't comment on it.
But even if you personalize it, you know, in my opinion, this is what this is regarding the subject.
Well, I'm going to defer to counsel, but from what she's saying, is it's Sisera-related issue. Mm-hmm. Like if you were to say, I think 3% of 50, you know, should be restored for all PEPRA employees because I think that's what we should be doing. And someone, one of us liked it, and even if you said this is Lily's personal opinion, then we'd be in trouble.
And interestingly, every slide that I have here, I included the statute specifically, so feel free to read the statute. We now are required, CSER is required, to provide you a copy of the Brown Act, which we did. You can go and take a look at it and see how it's defining these terms. But I also found it to be somewhat overreaching, and we'll see if it gets tested.
Yeah.
Like in my mind, it's a little bit related to like why I asked the question like a couple slides ago, right? Because if somebody likes it, and let's say the issue is something like half of the board is on the fence and half of the board is not, then people who see how somebody reacted, it could make up their minds. So maybe that's why.
And you see how that is, that discussion and that occurrence should really be happening here in the boardroom, yeah, right? With an agenda that's been posted, notice to the public, and an opportunity for the public to comment, an opportunity for the public to witness the debate that goes on among the board members. That's, you know, that's what the Brown Act is for. So I think we'll probably see more changes regarding social media because it's something that is here to stay and is being used more and more, and so we'll keep tracking it. Okay. So now on slide 9, we talk about specifically the agenda requirements that at least 72 hours before a regular meeting, the agenda has to be posted publicly. It has to provide to the public the time, the date, the location of the meeting, and it has to be accessible on the CSERA website in a direct and clear link. We don't want the public to have to try to figure out and have trouble figuring out where the agenda is in on the website. So it has to be a clear, direct link. On page 10, we go through the agenda requirements. If an item is not on the agenda, generally, it's not something that the board should be discussing. However, there are exceptions. If something, an item is not on the agenda, but a board or staff has a question, they can ask a question for clarification about this other topic that is not on the agenda. They can make a brief announcement or make a brief report. A board member may provide a reference to staff or other resources for factual information, request staff to report back to the board at a subsequent meeting concerning any matter, or take action to direct staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda. And I have the words brief underlined, brief announcement, brief report, because if it's not a topic that's not on the agenda, the that report, that announcement has to be brief. We can't go into a lengthy report with discussion and comments. That is over the line. We have to make sure that we're within the line of keeping it brief. Okay, another exception to the agenda requirement. So if there's a topic that is not on the agenda, but there's some urgent need to discuss it, it is allowed to be discussed, but the process is very strict. There has to be a two-thirds vote of the board, not majority, two-thirds, that there's a need to take immediate action on this item that's not on the agenda, and that the need for the action came to the attention of CSERA after the agenda was posted. So if that happens and there's a two-thirds vote that allows it, then the board may discuss this item that's not on the agenda. It's a very limited exception, but it's there. And the general rule is that the voting, the Brown Act requires a voting report of how each board member voted. And public comment, I mentioned it several times. Public comment is very important. It's a very central concept behind the Brown Act. And during each meeting of the board or the standing committees, the public has to be allowed an opportunity to comment. And the Brown Act does allow the board to impose reasonable time limits on public comment. So we're on slide 14, and this one talks about disruptive attendees. In a situation where the board meeting is taking place and there's an attendee or a group of attendees that are disruptive, the Brown Act does allow their removal. It does stipulate that members of the public that are not disruptive should be allowed to participate in the meeting. So next, on slide 15, we talk about closed session. Up until now, we talked about open session, notice of the public. The public may attend, may make comments, listen to the deliberations. But on the other side, the Brown Act also allows the board to have closed sessions on topics that are very specific, very limited, and enumerated in the statute. And that's because those certain items are either of a sensitive nature or would disclose to the public's information that might jeopardize the board's position. And so we have examples here on this slide of what types of items are allowed in closed session. The first one is the purchase or sale of a particular specific pension fund investment. That's allowed under the Brown Act to be done in closed session. And the next one is personnel matters, including disability applications. So when the board is reviewing disability applications, that can be done in closed session. Not all the SURL systems do that in closed session. It's allowed, but it's not required. And so there are a couple that handle their disability deliberations and decisions in public. CICERA is not one of those. We do ours in closed session, and that is authorized under the Brown Act. And the last example on this slide of a closed session that's authorized is a conference of the board with legal counsel, and that could pertain to pending litigation, exposure to litigation against the public entity, or if the board is meeting with legal counsel to decide whether to initiate litigation. Those are all topics that are allowed to be conducted in closed session.
Question on the first item. Sorry if you just flip back a second. And this may come up in the ad hoc Ledge Committee meeting, but under the first bullet, Is the board able to discuss a potential sale of a fund or a divestiture of an investment with a troubled manager in a closed session context?
A potential sale of a specific investment fund, yes, that can be done in closed session.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that in the ledge. Committee, the ad hoc committee, as to whether that statute is sufficiently broad enough to encompass some of the discussions that we could have about managers that don't need to be necessarily done in a public meeting, particularly given the number of people who listen to our recordings and monitor everything we do, right? So, anyway.
Good question. Thank you. We are on slide 16, and we're continuing to go over some examples of closed session items that are allowed under the Brown Act. And we have the board's conference with CICERA's designated representatives regarding employees' salaries and benefits. That is allowed to be done in closed session, but under that particular authorization, there's a prohibition against taking final action in closed session. The final action on salaries has to be done in open session. And another example that we have that is allowed in closed session is public employee performance evaluations. And there's specific rules about what the disclosure needs to be on the agenda regarding the employee title. And it's important to remember that performance evaluations in closed session cannot discuss compensation. That's a separate authorization. And so performance evaluation is separate from the discussion on compensation. Okay, and next on slide 17, with closed sessions, there is a requirement, specific requirements regarding disclosure. What does CICERA have to disclose to the public, either immediately after the closed session or at some point later on? And the public report has to include the vote or abstention of the board members. So for example, with disability reviews, those are done in closed session and a vote is taken in closed session, but then the report to the public after the conclusion of the closed session will specify how each board member voted on the disability application. And also, we just talked about the sale or purchase of an investment. If that's done in closed session, the report on that decision has to be made in public, but not on that same day. That report has to be done either at the first open meeting of the board held after the, it's the earlier of two dates, either the close of the investment transaction or the transfer of pension fund assets for the investment transaction. So makes sense that if the legislature is allowing the board to meet in closed session about the sale or purchase, the legislature is not going to require a report out that day, but after the transaction has concluded, then the legislature is requiring the report to be made. Again, that protects the board's ability to negotiate and be in a good bargaining position. Okay, so now we move on to the confidentiality of a closed session. Of course, if we're meeting in closed session and the matter is sensitive or confidential, all of the discussion that takes place in closed session is confidential, and board members or staff that's present may not disclose it to outside parties. Okay, let's next talk about teleconferencing. That's on slide 19. And that is the rules regarding board members teleconferencing into the meeting. We have that happen occasionally. Today is one example. We have one trustee who's remoting into the meeting via teleconferencing, and there's specific rules that apply to that. The agendas have to be posted at the teleconference location, and the teleconference location has to be identified on the agenda. We have to have at least 5 board members participate from locations within the county. Each teleconference location has to be accessible to the public. It's as if this is an extension of the public meeting, so it has to be accessible to the public, and we have to provide an opportunity for public comment from that location if any member of the public attends that remote location. And all votes have to be taken by roll call. You may recall we just mentioned the COVID-19 pandemic earlier in the meeting, and at that point in time, some of these rules were suspended because of the shutdown and board meetings had to be done remotely. So certain rules were modified to allow that, and then post-pandemic, there's other rules that now are in place to kind of, you know, allow for that if there's a future emergency again or a need to remote in. Some of that was recently done under SB 707 as well. I think it's definitely the pandemic and having those remote meetings changed the layout of public meetings going forward.
On the prior slide, I meant to ask you this, but I didn't want to interrupt you. I have interpreted the third bullet to mean there are five of us here in a single location.
No,
it's in a jurisdiction.
Yeah, right. No, I've always interpreted it thinking you needed to be in the same place.
You do if you're using an exception, which we don't do because we don't teleconference, you video. And so I've been on, for example, MTC at MTC meetings where we have had people who are teleconferencing in from San Jose, from Napa, other places, but we don't have a quorum in San Francisco, so someone can't use an emergency exception because we don't have a quorum there. But for other things, as long as, for example, Board of Supervisors for our subcommittees now, we notice, for example, Diane out in Brentwood, me in Danville, and neither of us, we're both in the county, neither of us are at a single location. And that works because we're both in the county. So for regular Brown Act, and I will note as point of interest, MTC and ABAG, they actually require me to show them a picture of where I posted the agenda and do an attestation that it's open for everyone, et cetera. So if you ever want a picture, I do. When I'm remote at my dad, helping my dad out, I have it on his front door on a glass door next to him. If you ever want a picture, happy to send that to you as well. But it's an interesting nuance that for regular Brown Act, you just have to be within the jurisdiction of whatever that committee is. And since we serve all of the county, it's a funny nuance.
Well,
so we could all, if we all want to notice our own houses, we could do that. Or our offices and all participate that way. It'd make for an interesting meeting, particularly since we have no video.
Yes. I was going to say, we're not set up with the video necessarily to do that, so that would pose some different challenges.
Well, you could do that telephonically.
Yeah, we could.
So here we have a summary of SB 707 and the provisions that apply to Sisera from that bill. We talked about SB 707 in December when we reviewed all of the different bills that were enacted. As I mentioned earlier, the local agencies now have to provide a copy of the Brown Act to all board members. And the removal of the social media sunset provision was part of SB 707, and it made a change with regard to the oral report that is required under the Brown Act to be made if there's an executive compensation change by broadening the list of positions that trigger that oral report rule. Those are the changes that impact Sisera. There are other changes in SB 707 that impact other categories of agencies that we're not a part of, so we didn't include that in our slide here. And lastly, the consequences of violating the Brown Act. That's really important to keep in mind. Criminal liability for individual board members in cases where the Brown Act was violated. Civil remedies, there are civil actions to stop, prevent, or invalidate the action of the board. And the Brown Act does allow attorney fees and costs to be awarded to the prevailing plaintiff. So that could be quite substantial. Any questions?
So, and I didn't, I'll admittedly say I didn't go back and look at the Brown Act on this question, but my recollection is that if for a wide variety of infractions or violations of the Act, the primary cure is a dual.
Yes.
Correct? Right? So if we don't do something in accordance with the statute, or if we missed a nuance or whatever, we can simply retake a vote, right? We can tee up the matter and take another vote and do it quote properly, and that actually cures the violation, right?
Yes, exactly. There's a opportunity to cure, and it's in the statute, so the plaintiff can't proceed without first notifying the agency of the alleged violation and providing the agency with time to cure. And usually the cure is, like you said, we put the item on the agenda, make sure that there's notice to the public, an opportunity for the public to participate, have a full discussion and an action on the item.
So would the alleged violator have to recuse themselves, or would they still be involved?
It depends on what the Brown Act.
What we're curing.
I mean, in other words, somebody might say, well, you didn't have the agenda posted within 72 hours. I had a recent situation in a city was playing an interesting game of chicken and posted the agenda for a Wednesday 5 p.m. closed session on Sunday afternoon at 5 p.m. I've played, cat and mouse with public agencies on postings before. Usually they relent and figure out what they're going to do on Saturday. This one went right literally to the last minute, 5 p.m. on Sunday. So if they blew that, let's say it was at 5:30 or somebody realizes they didn't also post the agenda at City Hall, well, the remedy would be, there's no quote violator. It's just the agency.
Procedurally
made a substantive error. And so you have to renotice that meeting and redo the business from that meeting, whatever you did to cure it. That's my understanding. I guess I shouldn't say it. So
strike. Yeah, I would agree with that.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
A quick question on 72 hours, that includes weekends, right? But it doesn't include.
Yeah, it's not.
Well, thank you for your attention. Let me know if you have any questions.
Any questions more, or I should say any more questions of Karen regarding Brown Act?
I have a question, not related to what we do, but you mentioned that some agencies do disability applications in the public meetings. How do they go around HIPAA, like what Jerry mentioned earlier about HIPAA? So there are some medical information in those disability applications, so they just don't mention them, or?
I believe that the agenda materials are done in such a way that to the extent there's any that are across the line and include confidential information, that is not part of the public agenda. At least that's what I would do. The discussion among the board also has to be a careful discussion, because you want to exercise your duty to evaluate the case, but you don't want to divulge any confidential, personal medical information in your discussion in public. But we haven't done that. This board has been conducting the disability discussions and decisions in closed session, and I think most of the SERL systems do that.
I think it's LACERA, at least I think they're amongst the agencies who do hearings in public, and I think they do like full disability hearing. They'll spend all day, 2 days doing that. It's a big lift.
And it may be that they provide a waiver for the member to sign and have the member choose. If I'm doing this in public, I'm permitting my personal information to be discussed. I don't know the answer to that, but that may be something that they do.
Any other questions of Karen?
Well, that concludes
my presentation. Thank you. Very interesting. Thanks. Always an interesting wrinkle from the Brown Act. All right, moving on.